Good afternoon, everyone. Thanks for coming down to the University of Winnipeg. My name is Ethan Osland. I am a host of a radio show at CKUW 95.9 FM here at the University of Winnipeg. It's called Black Mask, the Frequency of Resistance. I also do some activism with a group in Winnipeg called the Canada Palestine Support Network. First, we'll be hearing from Brian Latour. Brian Latour is a student activist and organizer at the University of Manitoba. He is a member of the Industrial Workers of the World, Winnipeg General Membership Branch, which is one of the oldest and most politically radical unions organizing workers today. Some of you might be familiar with some of the Starbucks union organizing drives that are taking place in the States and hopefully soon in Canada. Most notably, there are huge drives in the state of New York. There's also a very intense organizing drive in Minnesota, Minneapolis, and St. Paul for Jimmy John's workers, trying to get them their rights in their workplace, fair treatment, less abuse in the workplace, and a fairer wage as well. Brian is also a member of the Canada Palestine Support Network and is a founding member of the Winnipeg branch of Students Against Israeli Apartheid. And finally, we'll be hearing from Eve Engler. As some of you might know, he's the former vice president of the Concordia Student Union. He is a Montreal activist and author, and he has published four books. The Black Book of Canadian Foreign Policy, which was shortlisted for the Mavis Gallant Prize for Nonfiction and the Quebec Writers Federation Literacy Awards. He wrote a book called Playing Left Wing, From Rink Rat to Student Radical. And with Anthony Fenton, they co-wrote Canada and Haiti, Waging War on the Poor Majority. And recently, Eve published with Red Publishing and Fernwood Publishing, Canada and Israel, Building Apartheid. And that was the last time we saw him in Winnipeg. We brought him in to present that book. Eve was born in Vancouver, where he grew up playing hockey. He's quite accomplished on the rink. And he is based in Montreal, doing most of his writing and activism from there. Without further ado, I'd like to present Brian Latour. Brian.
All right, thanks, Ethan. Before I got here today, I decided to stop at the Mondragon, I grabbed some soup, and I saw an interesting thing that someone wrote on a chalkboard there. They wrote on the chalkboard, why did the NDP cross the road? And the answer was, to get to the center. Now, yeah, I think that's a very representative of a lot of the NDP's policies as of late. And I think when we're analyzing the Manitoba NDP and its policies towards Israel, it's important to start with this broader analysis of the NDP and Canadian social democracy, or at least the amorphous blob of pseudo-Blairism that kind of passes for social democracy these days, in order to avoid a few of the kind of pitfalls that crop into some left analysis of the NDP. Sometimes we tend, on the left, to think of the NDP as kind of our boys in parliament kind of thing, but it seems to me that in a lot of cases they really aren't. They're essentially career politicians, most of them, and very few of them have serious ties to any real social movements. And even with the labor movement, which in theory has influence over the NDP based on the MFL NDP affiliation, I've noticed that a lot of the times the tail seems to wag the dog on that front. And also the NDP has also throughout its history struggled with issues of imperialism. It goes back a long time. I was looking at even in the 40s you had some Manitoba CCF MLAs who were essentially purged from the CCF caucus for opposing Canadian participation in NATO. And that shows issues with the NDP, having trouble grasping issues of imperialism, and I think also at that time it also indicated the kind of rabid anti-communism of the NDP in the post-war era. More recently, the Manitoba NDP is also guilty of essentially promoting war and militarism in relation to Afghanistan through things like Yellow Ribbon campaigns, that sort of thing. A lot of the federal NDP's public statements seem to be, sometimes decent, but often they're kind of mild and very, equivocating on the war. And, of course, social democrats having issues with with the imperialism, that goes all the way back to 1914. Now there's, you know, a lot of issues here with the mantle of NDP and its support for Israel. First, we have the material support which this government gives to the Israeli state. Basically, under the Dewar and Selinger governments, the Manitoba has worked very hard to cultivate a kind of special relationship with the Israeli state. One of the main examples on this front is the links between the Department of Water Stewardship, headed by Christine Melnick, and the Israeli state and the Jewish National Fund, which I think Yves will be going into in more detail about the JNF. Yeah. Melnick is known as one of the staunchest pro-Israel voices in the caucus, and is pretty much a go-to person for the Manitoba NDP on the Israeli-Palestinian issue. And this deep cooperation that I'm referring to between water stewardship includes these Manitoba-Israel water symposiums, a lot of joint research projects, and the promotion of ecotourism, which can be problematic because often we see issues increasingly with the shared values campaigns of trying to essentially greenwash Israeli apartheid. And also, water is simply a major issue in Israel and Palestine. For example, all the water in the West Bank, the Palestinians living there, who make up about 85 to 90% of the population of the West Bank, they get about 17% of the water. The illegal settlers, who make up the other 10 to 15%, get 10%, and the other 73% of water in the West Bank winds up being diverted into Israel. So you wind up having a situation with differential access to water. Each Israeli per capita uses four times as much water as each Palestinian, and this becomes a major cornerstone of the apartheid system and also a kind of economic strangulation, especially for things like agriculture. And in addition to this support being material, there's also a political issue in that. For example, in 2008, shortly before the first Manitoba-Israel Water Symposium, Christine Melnick stated that she's trying to create a situation where people think of the Manitoba-Israel partnership as natural. She is also a founder of the Manitoba-Israel Shared Values Roundtable, which also features another NDP MLA, Sharon Blady, on the executive. And as said about her, the president of the JNF Prairie Region, Mal Lazarek, has said that she has been a pioneer of the special relationship between Israel and Manitoba. And this idea of shared values is a cornerstone of pro-Israel activism. The idea here is that similarities between Canada and Israel are essentially played up in order to bring up sympathy for the Israeli state and its actions, that sort of thing. The idea is to show that Israelis are just like us, and therefore we should support the actions of the Israeli state. And also the flip side being that the Palestinians aren't like us, and promoting some kind of Orientalist stereotypes of Palestinians, which essentially dehumanizes them. And this is also tied to the notion of Israel as a liberal democracy. They're a democracy. We always hear this. They're a democracy just like us. So we should uncritically support them even when they're not quite acting like a democracy. The only democracy in the Middle East, just like they said South Africa was the only democracy in Africa. This cooperation between Manitoba and Israel really climaxed in Greg Selinger's trade mission to Israel last fall. We have this new premier. He's traveling to Israel. I think it was his first trip there to cement this special relationship. And this was right in the wake of the murders on the flotilla, a couple years after the Gaza massacre. And we've still got the continuing oppression of Palestinians going on for the past however many decades. And this trademark mission was also marked with the appointment of a special representative to Israel for economic affairs and cultural relations, as well as a signing of agreements on things like commercial business development, agriculture, water, and ecotourism. Now, the trade missions and the water issue are all part of a kind of broader deepening of political and economic links between the Manitoba government and the Israeli state. Needless to say, this is something that we should all be concerned about, you know, when our government is essentially cozying up to this apartheid state, which is engaging in very nasty human rights violations, you know, in the occupied territories. You know, I think that the international community should work to kind of isolate and confront, you know, states which are involved in human rights violations instead of kind of rewarding them with, you know, economic partnerships and things like that. Education is another serious issue with partnerships, as I kind of hinted at. Melnick's water initiatives include a $250,000 scholarship program for students, you know, to attend post-secondary education on water in Israel, and guarantee them a job in water stewardship when they get back. Last year, we had a professor from the Technion visit Winnipeg, and during that, the professor himself, his specialty was in unmanned aerial vehicles, and during that visit, it was mentioned upcoming exchange programs being worked out between the engineering department at the University of Manitoba and the Technion in Israel. We also have deals signed for commercial business development between the Asper School of Business at the University of Manitoba and the Hebrew University of Jerusalem. This is to, you know, identify on jointly work on research advances which can kind of generate profit there. And the fact of the matter is that Israeli universities are heavily complicit in the apartheid systems. They're involved in, you know, the kind of intellectual work, the engineering work, that sort of thing, which helps create the physical manifestations of apartheid, and also the intellectual work for the intellectual justifications of Israeli apartheid. And we also, when we're talking about academic links to Israel, we need to, it's a point where we need to bring up the academic freedom for Palestinian students. You know, Palestinian students have to deal with a lot of attacks on their right to education, their academic freedom, things like university closures, checkpoints, restrictions on movement, especially for students in Gaza, things like that, which really hamper Palestinians' right to education. You can check out the Bereshit University right to education website if you want more information on that. And, you know, in addition to all this, we have some very extremely worrying statements from the Manitoba NDP, which give us an idea as to the very kind of undercurrent of pro-Israel policies. During the massacre in Gaza, for example, Justice Minister Dave Chomiak attended a Stand With Us rally and made comments which pretty much pinned all of the blame on the massacre of civilians in Gaza on Hamas, and pretty much absolved the Israeli state of its responsibility there. And, you know, we had NDP politicians attending this rally, but when there were rallies against the bombing of Gaza, I did not recognize, you know, a single NDP politician attend any of those rallies. We also had the first Israeli Apartheid Week held in Manitoba. This was last year. It also tended to elicit a negative response from the NDP. In the week leading up to IAW, Christine Melnick, again, she publicly supported attempts to encourage the university administration to ban Israeli Apartheid Week. Now, this turned out to be a dead end, as the university administration didn't really want to ban IAW. And after that, a conservative MLA wound up bringing forward a motion which officially denounced IAW as anti-Semitic, hateful, and offensive to South Africans. Because I suppose black South Africans like Desmond Tutu need white Tories in Manitoba to tell them what's offensive to them. I don't get it either. Our NDP MLAs did nothing to challenge the characterization of IAW organizers as, you know, hateful, anti-Semitic, these sorts of slanders, or even, you know, didn't challenge the you know, even like some of the conservative MLAs went so far as to make Nazi references, which were not challenged by the NDP at all. They Basically, they managed to avoid a vote on the actual motion itself by essentially talking it out, and mostly talking it out about how much they don't like IAW either, but that supporting this motion will give those nasty IAW people more attention than they deserve. So it wasn't, I mean, you shouldn't get confused and start thinking that they were sticking up for us when they didn't let that pass, because their statements during the debate were very nasty and pathetic. I know the a low point came when MLA Dave Chomiak refused to use the word apartheid, and for his entire speech kept talking about the A word. And you know, I feel that really the only reason that it didn't come to a vote was because the NDP brass and the caucus there wanted to avoid the fallout that ensued from a lot of the grassroots members when Sherry DeNovo, Ontario NDP MPP, voted for a similar motion in Ontario. And I think they were very concerned that had they allowed it to pass or supported this, they would wind up facing a similar backlash and similar issues with the, because there was a lot of fallout from within the party over that. You also had a similar motion come up federally. This one was kind of shot down by, the actions of Vancouver MP Libby Davies, among others. However, local NDP MP Judy Washalisa-Lease also commented to the National Post that using the term apartheid is hateful and hurtful. And these comments just could not have been more poorly timed, because this is a time when you've got these conservative and liberal politicians trying to get together, and when you wind up having the NDP in on it as well, it basically gives this idea of a false consensus, like, oh, all three political parties support it, therefore everyone supports it, all Canadians support it, which I really think is probably not true. It winds up giving these motions a little more credibility, and they're part of this broader campaign targeting Palestinian solidarity activists. Probably the most absurd instance of this was the NDP's response to Benai Britt's complaints about the grade 12 provincial exam about a few months ago. The exam asked students to write an essay responding to the question, do you think celebrities should be discussing and advocating on social issues? And it featured a sample essay by Chantal Kreviazuk. And this essay wound up, it mentioned, she was going all over the place mentioning children who are suffering the effects from warfare, from, kids in Sudan, kids in the Congo, and I guess she must have made the mistake of mentioning a kid in Gaza who was suffering. And that resulted in complaints. After Benai Britt complained about this exam, Educational Minister Nancy Allen said that she would make sure that it would never happen again. And the subtext of it is very clear that even a passing mention of Palestinian suffering is inappropriate for our schools. That we can't even talk about Palestinian suffering. And I think that's a very scary and a very a fairly racist subtext to that we can't talk about the suffering of the Palestinian people, but we can talk about suffering of anyone else. This statement by Nancy Allen, it was roundly seen as absurd. It even earned her some criticism from the Winnipeg Free Press, which is a media organization which is not exactly known to be critical of Israeli state policies. The other major figures on this issue locally are NDP MP Pat Martin and former MP Judy Washalisa-Lease. They have a fairly long history of support for the Israeli state. You have, in 2002, they, along with then Premier, now Harper's Ambassador to the U.S., Gary Dewar, they called for Sven Robinson to resign as the federal NDP's foreign affairs critic after his visit to the Palestinian Authority and some criticism of Israeli actions in Jenin. In 2004, both Martin and Judy Washalisa-Lease accepted a trip to Israel on behalf of the Canada-Israel Committee. And these trips are essentially propaganda exercises targeted at politicians and a kind of way to almost get them in, get politicians into the pockets of the organization's promoting these trips. When they were criticized for this by some grassroots members, Pat Martin lashed out. He said that it was the loony left in the party, and accused critics of anti-Semitism, saying that there's no room in this party for them, which is a pretty out there statement. After getting back from the trip, both MPs wound up defending the apartheid wall. Pat Martin even went so far to say that building the wall was showing a lot of restraint, and if he were living there, he wouldn't be able to show that much restraint. And that's a very chilling statement, because it's difficult to imagine what could be showing less restraint than building the wall. The wall cuts off Palestinians from their communities, that sort of thing. What's the alternative that Pat Martin's alluding to? These two figures also went on to oppose resolutions supporting Israeli withdrawal from Lebanon in 2006 at the NDP, federal NDP convention, and they went on to serve on the Canadian Parliamentary Coalition to Combat Anti-Semitism, or CPCCA. Now, despite its name, this coalition, it's not really an official parliamentary coalition, and it's not about combating anti-Semitism. A lot of the public statements have shown it to be focused mainly on quelling the rising tide of Palestinian solidarity activism, particularly on campuses, where we've got the use of the apartheid framework for analysis, which I think has been very valuable and very important to the advances to this movement over the past few years. So in short, the Manitoba NDP seems to be more than just unsupportive of the Palestinian solidarity movement, but in many cases in active opposition to it, to the point of even participating in the broader campaign to kind of slander and repress Palestinian solidarity activism. Now, we can get here and we can ask ourselves, are these public statements from these NDP MPs and MLAs simply a few MLAs mouthing off on their own, or do they represent a broad consensus within the leadership of the party, or even a de facto party policy of identifying strongly with the apartheid state? Now, while a few MLAs in particular may be leading the charge, it seems to me as though the entire party has bought into this and is very supportive. Let's look at it this way. I can't recall, and in fact it's almost inconceivable for me to even imagine these days, say an MLA or another leading figure in the Manitoba NDP attending, say, a commemoration of the Nakba or a rally against the Gaza massacre, or even something as speaking positively about Israeli Apartheid Week or the BDS movement or Palestinian rights in general. For example, simply look at the treatment of Libby Davies or Sven Robinson by the federal NDP to see what's probably going to happen to an MLA who speaks out. Or, for example, when the Brandon NDP Women's Association co-sponsored the recent George Galloway talk, Christine Melnick wound up in an interview stating that the Manitoba NDP is taking this incident very seriously and are looking into the matter, which implies that the head office isn't too happy about their support for the Galloway discussion. But on the other hand, so we have this issue of basically there's pretty much no public support for Palestinian rights coming out of any of these MLAs or anything. And you would imagine that it's probably on, that MLAs who would come out in support of Palestinian rights, there's a good chance that they would face some sort of disciplinary action by the party. While on the other hand, you've got the likes of Melnick and Chomiak, who are pretty much given carte blanche to support colonialism and apartheid, or mouth off against Palestinian rights, or even against the rights of local anti-apartheid organizers. So, in conclusion, we're looking at a few problems here. First, we can look at the Manitoba NDP's long descent into, Blairism, New Labour type politics, things like triangulation, trying to basically trying to appease right-wing forces at the expense of, you know, listening to any sort of grassroots progressive movements. And although, as I've said, they've always had issues with imperialism, and I think it's a major pitfall in the left when we start to analyze the NDP, a lot of times people basically blame our issues with them on recent leaders. So for example, we'll rail against Gary Dewar, basically, and say he's selling out the principles of our wonderful old leaders, say Tommy Douglas or Ed Schreier or whoever we put up on that pedestal from 40 or 50, 60 years ago. As an example of this, I remember being at a conference on the 40th anniversary of the waffle, and I remember seeing one old-time waffler say to another, remember back in the day when we used to hate on Schreier and Blakeney? You know, now with Calvert and Dewar, I actually miss those guys. And, you know, it's not as though this is also the only issue where the Manitoba NDP is out of touch with the, you know, progressive social movements on. We have, for example, the student movement, which has been very frustrated with the NDP's flip-flopping on tuition fees, and the official labor movement in Manitoba seems to have pretty much given up on the hope of getting anti-scab legislation because it's pretty well futile at this point, without any sort of mass mobilizations or anything like that. So in short, we need to approach the issue of the Manitoba NDP support for Israel head on, especially because in Manitoba we're probably seeing kind of the worst of NDP support for Israel. You know, I think that this is a very much an epicenter of, you know, we have both the NDP MPs who are on the CPCCA, are from our Winnipeg area MPs, that sort of thing. It's kind of an epicenter of you know, support for Israeli apartheid in the Manitoba NDP, in the NDP, and in broader social democratic movements. And I think we also need to often start treating the NDP not really much differently from any other political party. A lot of the times on the left, we tend to kind of treat them with kid gloves or uncritically support them almost no matter how bad they are, and that isn't really a way forward for us. I think we need to keep working up on building social movements, building up the Palestinian Solidarity Movement, and making sure that these social movements are fiercely independent of any political party that would throw us under the bus, such as the NDP. And I think especially the BDS movement, I think, needs to be really built up in Manitoba, because these are all issues that directly connected to the BDS movement. Like, the S stands for sanctions, which means, you know, we shouldn't be promoting economic partnerships and that sort of thing. You know, we should be, you know, treating Israel like the rogue state that it is. And I think that you know, we can all hope here that as the wheel of history tends to turn, I think one day Israeli apartheid will be eliminated and it'll be remembered about as fondly as South African apartheid is remembered today. And when these days come, I think it's going to be important to remember and take lessons from the support for Israeli apartheid of the Manitoba NDP over these years. And I think that's going to be, you know, a major lesson looking back on the struggle and seeing kind of who supported it in the early days and who didn't. Thank you.
Is putting a bit of historical context to the Manitoba NDP taking these pro-Palestinian positions that effectively endorse the dispossession of Palestinians. Unfortunately, there is a long history of this. Going back to broaden out beyond just the NDP, but left circles more generally, going back to 1956, the Canadian Labour Congress actually passed a resolution calling for the Canadian government to, quote, lend sympathetic support to Israel's request for defensive armaments in order that Israel may match in quality, if not quantity, the constant flow of Soviet bloc armaments to the Arab countries, and further appeals to our government to use its good offices in urging other free Western countries to do likewise. I don't know a whole lot about the history of the Canadian Labour Congress's foreign policy, but I would be surprised to find out if they've ever called on selling the Canadian government to sell weapons to any other country. And this is in 1956, the year that Israel invaded Egypt with the former colonial powers, Britain and France. This is after a couple years of constant Israeli incursions into Egypt in 54 and 55, incursions into Gaza, where many Palestinians were killed. So this is history that goes back. This is rooted in something within the left in Canada, in our political culture. And to talk about prominent figures, people that we look up to as great social democratic figures and their position vis-a-vis Zionism, the one example that I'm most struck by in researching the history of Canadian foreign policy is Tommy Douglas. In 1975, Tommy Douglas said this to the Hizdatrut Labor Federation. This is Israeli Labor Federation, 1975. The main enmity against Israel is that she has been an affront to those nations who do not treat their people and their workers as well as Israel has treated hers. So that's another way of saying that the reason people are critical of Israel is just because of how good of labor politics Israel had. Nothing to do with the Nakba, the expulsion of 750,000 Palestinians in 1947-48, forced out primarily at behest of Zionist military forces. No mention, this is 8 years into Israel's occupation of the West Bank. But for Tommy Douglas, it was always just a question of how well Israel treats its workers, and there was anti-labor hostility. That was what was motivating Palestinians in their criticism of Israel. So these are examples of this of the Zionism within the left in Canadian political culture, within the social democratic left. Another example, in 1985, the Canadian Senate put out a pamphlet or a position statement on Israel's invasion of Lebanon, which was Israel invaded again in 1982 and was occupying Lebanon in 1985, put out a statement criticizing the invasion of Lebanon and providing sort of mild support for the PLO. This is after much of the world had already recognized the PLO, and the Senate, finally, the Canadian Senate says that Canada should have some sort of position vis-a-vis the PLO. The only non-Jewish Canadian institution, according to Globe and Mail, to criticize the Canadian Senate, this is the Senate, let's not forget, this is that unelected body of old white guys who are not particularly progressive type individuals. The only body to criticize the Canadian Senate for its mild endorsement of the PLO was the Canadian Labour Congress's head, Dennis McDermott, who went out publicly and went after the Senate's report. And this is what McDermott said in the letter to the Globe and Mail, I believe. I severely criticize the report on the Middle East by the Canadian Senate Standing Committee on Foreign Affairs, which attempted to legitimize the PLO. I said then that the committee was guilty of, quote, an exercise in bad judgment and even worse taste, and that the senators were seriously misguided in their report, which, quote, tries as hard as it can to portray the PLO as a democratic charity, busy building kindergartens. I made the further point that it was the PLO that gave the world airline terrorism. I take considerable pride in my long-standing role in Canada and abroad as a spokesman on behalf of the legitimate aspirations of the State of Israel and as a critic of the PLO and its misguided friends. This is open very open, bombastic hostility towards the Palestinian cause by Dennis McDermott, the head of the CLC, who called himself a Catholic Zionist. There is actually a monument to him at the Hizdotrut, one of the Hizdotrut schools in Israel, monument to McDermott because of his long-standing support of Israel within the Canadian political context. There was groups like the Canadian Association for Labour Israel that raised funds for the Hizdotrut Labour Federation. And the Hizdotrut, while understandably, I think from a head of a Canadian union, you could understand, you could look at the Hizdotrut and be somewhat, you would be happy, you look fondly at their position within Israeli society. As a labor leader in Canada, you would say, hey, look, Israeli society has quite advanced labor policy. The power of labor seems quite significant. I think that has significantly changed over the past two decades. But at one point, that was definitely much more the case in Israel than it would be within Canada. But you have to understand that the Hizdotrut was a racist labor federation. As Golda Meir said when she back in 1920, it was designed as a colonial entity to advance the Zionist cause. The Zionist military forces were actually under Hizdotrut control between 1920 and 1929 in pre-state Israel. It was an organization that excluded Arabs until the mid-60s. It's still, according to Yuri Davis in 2003, still within the kibbutz, there's an exclusion of Palestinian citizens of Israel. So it continues to be a racist organization, though that has improved. And so Canadian organizations were raising funds for the Hizdotrut, had significant connections at the CLC conventions. Hizdotrut officials would regularly come alongside American and British labor officials. Hizdotrut officials were the other main invitees. So there's a long history of this Zionism within the labor movement, within the NDP, and that, as Brian has gone onto it in detail, one other example that continues to today are there are a number of Canadian unions that still buy State of Israel bonds. The last figure was $20 million a year of State of Israel bonds that Canadian unions buy. And this is going to the Israeli state, you know, which the Israeli army is getting its resources from the Israeli state. So this is a form of support that I know there are people within the Palestinian Solidarity Movement that want to, you know, go after this, have campaign and getting unions to divest of their State of Israel bonds today. So this history of left Canadian support for Zionism, for Israel, and let's not just call it for Israel or for Zionism, but effectively against Palestinians. You can't understand support for Zionism without understanding dispossession of Palestinians. I think it's rooted in a whole number of things. It's rooted in labor Zionism. It's rooted in the idea that there was a socialistic component to Zionism, which there was. Now, was that socialistic component to Zionism because of the needs of colonialism, or was it because of something else? I think it primarily was because of the needs of colonialism. There was a need for exclusive Jewish labor organizations, exclusive Jewish supremacist organizations that excluded Palestinians. There was a need for that within the early Zionist colonial process. But nevertheless, that engendered support within the left in Canada. It was seen as a model of some success. And that's taking place because of the fact that that idea can make sense in Canada among the left is because of racism. right? Because of the idea that the advanced Europeans were you know, providing a successful socialistic model in the Middle East, and the Palestinians were basically seen as inferior. So I think it's based upon a racism that the left has been doses of, and that, you know, we see that even, you know, here within domestic policy vis-a-vis First Nations. I think you see that some of that within Canada as well. And I think it's also tied into a geopolitics, right? A view of Israel as an outpost of the West in the Middle East. And it's important to note that someone like Tommy Douglas actually threatened to step down as leader of the NDP if the members of the party passed a resolution calling for Canada to pull out of NATO. Now, if this was just a matter of Tommy Douglas making unfortunate comments about Palestinians, or a matter of unions making unfortunate taking unfortunate positions about Canada's support for the PLO, or today Pat Martin just making unfortunate comments about the apartheid wall, it wouldn't be a particularly big deal. But the fact that the left, the dominant left, political parties, the leadership of unions has historically been so sympathetic to Israel has allowed a situation where we have a government in Ottawa that is made Canada the most pro-Israel country in the world, diplomatically at least. The Harper government has made Canada the most pro-Israel country in the world, and it's basically an Israel no matter what policy. Whatever you do, however many Palestinians you kill, however many Lebanese, however much of Lebanon you destroy, however much of Iran, hopefully not, but possibly you destroy, we support you. That's the policy of our conservative government today in Ottawa, and that's just the diplomatic sort of discussion realm, but it's much deeper in terms of concrete aid to Israel in its dispossession of Palestinians. So, just for instance, you can't imagine a situation where the NDP, or I can't imagine, where Jack Layton would stand up and say, the Canadian government should no longer subsidize charities that work in the occupied territories against international law, no longer subsidize charities that dispossess Palestinians in the Negev, no longer subsidize charities that are based upon racism, like the Jewish National Fund. You can't imagine NDP politicians standing up and saying that, and saying that our individuals should not be able to provide donations to charities operating in occupied territories and receive a tax subsidy. That is what exists today, right? That is what exists today openly. The Harper government has made openly that the previous Krajicek government, there was a bit more nuance to it, but today it's legal to openly raise money for charities, Israeli charities, or Canadian charities giving money to Israeli organizations that are openly involved in the occupation post-67, an occupation that the Canadian government ostensibly considers contrary to international law. But you can't imagine the NDP standing up and saying something on the matter. Now, if the NDP was prepared to stand up and say something on the matter and make it an issue, it would, I believe, have a very significant impact and put a whole lot of pressure on the Canadian Revenue Agency to change policy, because the majority of Canadians don't want our tax dollars to be subsidizing illegal settlements. So the point in saying that is that the lack of critical policy from the left, the sympathy on the left towards Zionism, towards Israel, has provided basically carte blanche to the Harper government to support whatever policy, concrete, tangible support to Israel. So we have a situation where Peter McKay, Canada's defense minister, was just in Israel a few days ago. Some people saw that Peter McKay was in Israel. that was not much discussed in the Canadian media, but he was there to go and extend the military ties between Canada and Israel. And he actually, in the statements he made, he talked about how Israel is really helping Canada out in Afghanistan, right? The policies, the technologies that Israel has, the Israel military industrial complex in Israel, the Israeli army has perfected, if you like, on the Palestinians, on the Lebanese. The you know, there's a lot of experience that the Israeli security technologies, the drones that Canada buys from Israel, etc. These military strategies, these have been perfected on the Palestinians, and now the Canadian military wants to learn from these to go use on people in Afghanistan. And this is part of a deepening, a really taking place below the radar, but a real serious deepening of military ties between the Canadian military and Israeli military. About 2 months ago, the head of the Israeli military was on a visit to Canada, in a 5-day-long visit. Again, didn't get much discussion. So part of that, those deepening of ties, back in October of 2009, Walter Nadigzink, the head of the Canadian military, was also in Israel. Access to information showed how the point was to deepen those military ties between Canada and Israel again. Another example of this Harper government's pro-Israel policy that's not receiving the attention that it deserves, and it's beyond just the diplomatic kind of comment realm, but really in terms of concrete, tangible support for Israel's occupation policy, for Israel's hostility towards the Hamas government, is something called Operation Pretus. People heard of Operation Pretus? No one? Well, according to Peter Kent, Canada's, well, no law now, he's the environment minister, but until recently he was the deputy foreign affairs minister, Operation Pretus is Canada's second largest deployment after Afghanistan. Second largest deployment after Afghanistan. That's an interview with the Jerusalem Post back in September. It's not significant in terms of numerically. I think there's 18 Canadian troops in the West Bank. It's Canada's military mission in the West Bank. And it's part of the police training, security training, headed by U.S. General, Lieutenant General Keith Dayton. Some people may have familiar with the Dayton forces, the Dayton's Men, as Palestinians have dubbed them. It's a security force that, according to Canada's ambassador in Tel Aviv, John Allen, is designed to, quote, to ensure that the PA, the Palestinian Authority, maintains control of the West Bank against Hamas. So Canada's involved in training a Palestinian security force explicitly to sow division within Palestinian society. That's our ambassador's open about that. The longer term, medium longer term goal is really to aid the U.S. The Israeli occupation of the West Bank. But this, the open explicit aim is to combat the rise of Hamas. And so there's the Canadians, at least 18 Canadian troops involved in training in the West Bank. According to Dayton, U.S. general who was in Iraq after the U.S. invasion there and has been leading this, he just actually stepped down like 6 weeks ago, but had been leading the mission in the West Bank. The Canadian personnel, the Canadian troops, are very important because the American troops have restrictions on their travel in the West Bank. The Canadians don't. So Dayton has referred to the Canadians as his eyes and ears in the West Bank. The road warriors, as they're dubbed by the Canadian military. And this mission, this Operation Pretus, is part of a 5-year, $300 million Canadian aid program to the Palestinians. Many people here, I'm sure, are familiar with the fact that the Harper government was the first government to cut off, after Israel, to cut off aid to the Palestinian Authority after Hamas won the democratic elections in 2006. Elections overseen, monitored by Elections Canada, so fairly, I think widely seen as fairly legitimate elections. The Palestinians voted for the wrong people, according to our government. And so the response of the Harper government was to cut off aid, to undermine Hamas's victory. And then when there was a Palestinian unity government that was created in March of 2007, the Canadian government was the only government to refuse to have relations with the Palestinian unity government, designed to force that government to collapse. Again, to sow division within Palestinian society and to support the most compliant factions of Palestinian political life. So once the unity government had collapsed, then the Harper government announced a five-year, $300 million aid program to the Palestinians. And according to Peter Kent back in September, quote, most of the money of the $300 million is going to Operation Pretus, going to training the security force that is openly being promoted as a way to undermine Hamas, and less officially a force to oversee Israel's occupation. The Shin Bet, the Israeli internal intelligence, vets all the Palestinian security officials. So if you want to be in the Dayton-led, Dayton-trained mission, the Israeli intelligence needs to okay the Palestinians. This force, just to give an example of what it's been used for, is that back in during the attack against Gaza, the 22-day assault, there were protests in the West Bank against Israeli policy in Gaza. This Dayton-led force put those protests down. There's been hundreds and hundreds of opponents to the Abbas authority in the West Bank. Let's not forget that Abbas's mandate ended in January of 2009, so you have an unelected government. That this is where the Palestinian force is under the control of this unelected government. And there's been recent surveys about Palestinian attitude towards the freedom in the West Bank, the freedom to criticize the government structures, the freedom to political organization, have drastically reduced alongside the Canada's role and America's role in training this Palestinian security force. So the goal is to have basically something similar to what you have in Egypt, right? Is an intensive security apparatus to protect a illegitimate or dubious force. But in the Palestinian case, this is a Palestinian a political entity, Fatah under Abbas, who is very compliant towards the Israeli occupation forces. So I belabor the point about Operation Pretus because it's something that's basically not discussed in the Canadian media. There's basically no discussion of the matter. And there's all arms of the Canadian government involved in this process. There's military, there's RCMP, there's foreign affairs officials, there's Justice Canada, there's the Canadian Border Services Agency, and it's tied into the Canada-Israel security agreement signed back in border security agreement signed by the Harper government back in 2008. And it's also tied into the growing military ties between Canada and Israel. And people in this room probably know the list of Canadian diplomatic moves in support of Israel against international opinion is extensive. Just one more example, because it's recent. Last week at something called the Futures Forum, the Canadian government, according to the Qatari official from Qatar, was the government that blocked putting a paragraph about the Palestinian cause in the final declaration. So even the other G8 countries were trying to lobby the Harper government to accept putting this paragraph in the final declaration, and the other G8 countries couldn't lobby Canada to accept it. So my point in saying that is just it's literally almost on a weekly basis. There's another example of Canadian diplomatic support against the vast majority of the world in support of Israeli dispossession of Palestinians. To get it close to conclusion here, the situation is, as Brian has outlined well, is bad. I think it's particularly bad here in Manitoba with regards to the left and Israel. But it's a whole lot better than it has been for much of the past 5 or 6 decades. While unions today, like QP Ontario, passed resolutions calling for boycott in support of the boycott, divestment, and sanctions. In the late 70s, Canadian unions were actually calling on the Canadian government to pass legislation to outlaw Canadian companies that participated in the Arab boycott campaign of Israel. So you have like a total reversal of the opinion of some of the unions, right? The FNEC, Teachers Federation in Quebec, the CSQ, I think it was the fourth largest union federation in Quebec, passed resolutions in support of BDS. You have a situation where there are NDP MPs like Libby Davies who are saying sensible things on the matter. Unfortunately, they get criticized for saying that the occupation began in 48, which she said back in May after the attack against the Gaza flotilla, when clearly it did begin in 48. 750,000 Palestinians were driven from their home. But that's still not acceptable in the official realm. But you have this, it's increasingly becoming acceptable. And fortunately, I don't think I see Cy Gonick in the room here. So I'll go into this part is that if you read Canadian Dimension magazine, which is a great, great magazine, read back issues of Canadian Dimension magazine and look at the position that Canadian Dimension was taking vis-a-vis Israel a couple decades ago. It was not pretty. There was in many instances very open support for Israeli policy post-67 war, very open support. And read Canadian Dimension magazine today, and those positions are no longer tenable among more sort of internationalist-minded folks on the left. So you have these shifts that are taking place, which they're happening way too slow. They're not necessarily for us, for Palestinians. They're happening way too slow. They're not where they should be. There is still an acceptance within the left of a European nationalist ideology that does not accept all people as being equal. And I think the crux of what the left is about, should be about, is equality, right? The sense that all people, wherever you happen to be born in Vancouver, or you happen to be born in Port-au-Prince, or you happen to be born in Janine, you are part of humanity and have there's a sense of equality, and that's at the crux what the left should be about. And I think that's the way to look at the issue today, and it's about demanding that we stand up for equal rights for all people, whether you're born Jewish Israeli in Tel Aviv or whether you're born Palestinian Arab or Palestinian Muslim in Gaza. And the political, the needs of being in power as the Manitoba government's been, or being the head of the union, should not be allowed to push out those the value of equality and the principle of equality. And to finish, I'll just end on a note of going back. I think we need to go back. To the position of one of the founders of the Cooperative Commonwealth Federation, a Winnipegger, J.S. Wordsworth, who this is at a time before the NDP or the CCF, the predecessor to the NDP, got caught up in Zionism. This is what J.S. Wordsworth had to say about the issue back in the late 30s. "It was easy for Canadians, Americans, and the British to agree to a Jewish colony as long as it was somewhere else. He said, why pick on the Arabs other than for, quote, strategic and imperialistic considerations?" And I think that it's a shame that we have a situation today where the Manitoba government that's supposed to come out of the history of people who struggled, like J.S. Woodworth, would be signing agreements with the Jewish National Fund, making these statements, and again, to reiterate, I think that what we need to get back to is the principle of equality. And if the left doesn't stand for equality of all people, no matter your race, no matter gender, where you're born, etc., what do we stand for? I'll leave it at that. Thank you very much.